All right, Rabbi, say good morning. Let us begin. Today's daf is Kuf Tes Zayin 116. We begin by thanking our sponsors for this morning's shiur. Thank our Day of Learning sponsor, Howard and Aileen Friedman, in memory of Howard's sister, Fia Pessel, Bas Shalom Zichrono Livracha. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, her neshama will have an aliyah and family a nechama. We thank the Friedmans very much for their sponsorship. So with that, let us begin. So as I mentioned, today's daf is Kuf Tes Zayin 116. We are picking up on Kuf Tes Vav 115b, exactly six lines up from the bottom, middle of the line, right where the wide lines begin. Ibailu. So we'll say, remember again, today really another incredibly fascinating Gemara. So we're going to discuss today, remember, the Gemara left off with this concept that the basic definition of a sefer is 85 letters. So 85 letters makes a sefer. So the Gemara says, remember, it's based on the section of Vayhi ben Sa'aron. Again, we'll discuss why the Vayhi ben Sa'aron represents sefer. We'll see that in today's daf. But Lamaisa, 85 letters, that's what constitutes a sefer. So the Gemara says, Ibailahu, do these 85 letters have to be like together in the sefer, or can they be dispersed throughout the scroll? Rav Huna says they must be together. Rav Chista Amar Afilu Mefuzaros. Rav Chista said even if they are scattered around. Sefer Torah Shabala. If you have a sefer Torah that was worn out, the Braisa clearly indicates that if you have a worn out sefer Torah, as long as there are still 85 letters throughout the sefer, it has the identity of a sefer, and you're permitted to save it on Shabbos. The Braisa clearly seems to indicate that what? That halacha lemaisa, the 85 letters can be spread out amongst the entire scroll. That seems to be a refutation of Rav Huna's position, to which the Gemara said, "Tiv Rav Huna, Tir Gemara Rav Chista, Aliba de Rav Huna Betevos." So Rav Chista explains that no, it could even according to Rav Huna, when talking about letters or talking about words, I should say. Look at Rashi Tevos, Hadik Tani Lalakit the Mashlumam Mefuzaros, Lo Lalakit Osva Oslavat Ela Lalakit Teva Shlemo, Teva Kan Beteva Kan. Both says quite possible when the Brisa says that the letters could be dispersed throughout the scroll. What it means is what? That you could have words that are made up with letters that are dispersed throughout the scroll. In other words, even Rav Huna will agree with the following. Either you have 85 letters concentrated in one place, or you could have 85 letters that are dispersed throughout the scroll, assuming that what? That the letters are not just standalone solitary letters, but the letters are part of words. And the words, again, are dispersed throughout the scroll. So the Gemara goes right to Tanu Rabbanan. So the Gemara asks the following. So the Gemara deals the following shayla, or the issue. Vayhi ben Sa'aron v'yomer Moshe, parasha zu, asla kadosh baruch hu simanios milamala u'lemata. So we'll remember again, the parasha Vayhi ben Sa'aron. So remember again, if you look in a Sefer Torah, it has nuns. Right? Nuns that block it off. So again, it's a section that seems to be its own individual parsha, its own individual section, demarcated by a nun at the beginning and a nun at the end. Lomar, why does it have those demarcating symbols? Tav of Kuf Tes Zayin. Lomar She'in Zemekoma. It will say those nuns teach us that this section of Vayhi ben Sa'aron doesn't really belong where it's placed. We'll say, Vayhi ben Sa'aron is placed at the end of the 10th chapter of Bamidbar. Where does it really belong? So the Gemara is suggesting it really belongs at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, when we talk about the Degalim, when we talk about the flags, and we talk about the encampment and the way Klal Yisrael traveled. So it makes sense to have that section, Vayhi ben Sa'aron Vayomer Moshe Kumash. So again, Vayhi ben Sa'aron, when the Aaron would travel, Moshe Avinu would say, the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar speaks about how Klal Yisrael camped and how they traveled. As such, it makes sense to have that section there. To which the Gemara says, Rabbi Omer, lo min Hashem huzeh, ela mipnei she-sefer chashuv hu b'fnei atzmo. Rabbi says, no, the reason for the nuns is not to tell you that the section doesn't belong here. Rather, the reason for the nuns ultimately is to teach you that Vayhi ben Sa'aron is its own sefer. It's its own book. Look at Rashi. Lo min Hashem hu zeh. Rashi says, Zelo Hashem shel tamei asimonios de mekomo hu de parsha zu betchilas masa shnosu meh hasina ayri ki dichsiv le'almine vahi bechodash hashin b'shon hashinis. So ultimately, again, so Rabbi says, Rabbi disagrees. Rabbi says, no. Vaibin Saron is exactly where it should be. So why do you have the nuns? The nuns are there to indicate that it is a sefer unto itself. Now, what does that mean? We'll say, watch this. Kiman az lahadarim shoar nachman amar yonasan. Chatzva amudah. Suppose that the Gemara quotes the pasuk from Mishlei. Chatzva amudah shiva. He hewed out the seven pillars. Seven pillars. What are the seven pillars? Elu shiva sifrei Torah. These are the seven books of the Torah. We'll say, who? Seven books of the Torah. What are you talking about? Kiman kirebi. We'll say, Rebbe holds there are seven books of the Torah. Now, what does that mean? So watch this. Essentially, I will say, Sefer Bamidbar is really three Svarim. There is the part of Chumash Bamidbar up until Vayhi ben Sa'a Aron. That's one Sefer. Vayhi ben Sa'a Aron is its own Sefer. And then the section after Vayhi ben Sa'a Aron is another Sefer. So therefore, you have Bereshis Shmos Vayikra, Bamidbar 1, Bamidbar 2, Bamidbar 3, and Dvarim. Seven Svarim. Seven Svarim. To which the Gemara says, and who argues on Rebbe? This is incredible. What Rebbe Shimon Leal says, this is really incredible. When Mashiach comes, the section of Vayhi ben Sa'a Aron is going to be removed from where it is right now, from Perek Yud in Chumash Bamidbar, and is going to be placed in the beginning of Chumash Bamidbar, right? Because that's the appropriate place. So if that's the case, why is it written here in the middle, right towards the middle of Chumash Bamidbar? Because Rabbi say, as we're going to see in just a moment, the section of Vayhi ben Sa'a Aron interrupts two difficult circumstances for Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't want it to be that there will be two unfortunate episodes juxtaposed to one another. So what did the Ribbono Shel Olam do? He plucked out this section, Vayhi ben Sa'a Aron, put it in between the two unfortunate events in order to separate them. But when Mashiach comes, Vayhi ben Sa'a Aron is going to be lifted out and put back in the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. We'll say, what are the two unfortunate episodes? Paran Shnia Mahi, Vayhi Am Kimis Oninim. Because we'll say the pasuk says that people were complaining to Moshe Rabbeinu. So there was one episode of complaining, right? Poronas Rishon, what was the first unfortunate episode? Vayisame Harashem. They traveled away from the mountain of God, from Har Sinai. Vamrav Chama Bar Chanina, Shesaru Me'achore Hashem. And also when the Pasuk says that they went ahead and they left the mountain of God, that was not just a geographic statement, but rather it was an emotional, spiritual statement as well. They had turned away from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So where is the appropriate place of Vayhi ben Sa'a Aron? Amravashi b'digolim. It's in the beginning of Chumash Bamidbar when there is a discussion about the flags. So a number of very important pieces of information come out over here. Number one, Vayhi ben Sa'a Aron is treated as its own parasha. Now, this machlokis, is it treated as its own parasha or is it treated as its own sefer? Rebbe says it's treated as its own sefer. Therefore, according to Rebbe, there's literally seven chumashim. There's seven chumashim. Three of the seven is Bamidbar being split up into three different svarim. But what everyone agrees it does give us is that the section of Vayhi ben Sa'a Aron teaches us the minimum unit to create a sefer, and that is 85 letters. So as long as you have a sefer Torah that has 85 letters, or any other scroll that has of Tanakh that has 85 letters, even if the letters are dispersed, Halacha Lamaisa, such a scroll has the status of a sefer and can be saved on Shabbos. But we'll say, interesting further discussion. We all agree that ultimately, again, that according to one opinion, the reason why, even though Vayhi ben Sa'a Aron does not belong in Perek Yud in Bamidbar, but it really belongs at the beginning of Chumash Bamidbar, why was it put in Perek Yud? In order to go ahead and interrupt between two unfortunate episodes. Klal Yisrael veering away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu after Matan Torah, and ultimately again the people complaining against Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the desert. So in order to not have two unfortunate episodes juxtaposed, Vayibin Sa'aron is put in there. What's going to happen to Vayibin Sa'aron? Mashiach comes, Machlokes. Some say it's going to be left just where it is. Others explain that, in fact, it is going to be removed from Perek Yud and placed back in Perek Aleph, where its rightful position with part of the story or part of the narrative of the flags, the encampment, and the movements of Klal Yisrael. Okay, Iboy Lehu. Hagil Yonan shall say for Torah Matzilon Osom Ned Leika or E Matzilon Osom Mibni Ad Leika. What's an interesting question? What about Kavanos? Up until now, I was thinking about, can you save a safer from a fire? Now, we're transitioning a little bit. Well, so what about the Gvil? Let's say you have a piece of blank parchment, right? A piece of, I mean, we'll say Gvil represents the borders. Remember again, if you ever see a Sefer Torah, so you'll notice again that you don't have writing on the top, on the bottom, and on the sides, right? There's room, there's a margin on the top, there's a margin on the bottom, and there's a margin in between columns. Those empty margins are called a Gvil. So I will say, are you permitted to save gvilin on Shabbos? Which is another way of saying, do the gvilin themselves have the kiddusha of a sefer Torah or not? To which the Gemara says, Tashma, let's analyze. Sefer Torah Shabala, if a sefer Torah was worn out, im yesh bo lelakish one of the chamish osios, kigon parashos vayibin sora matzilin, vim la vim matzilin. So what did we see before, Bosai? If you have a worn out sefer Torah, as long as there are 85 letters, like the section of Vayibin Sa'aron, you could save the Sefer. If it doesn't have 85 letters, you can't save the Sefer. Va'amai, but why do you need 85 letters? Sefer claim Mishim Gvilin, to which the day, why don't you say you could save it based on the fact that it has columns? In other words, I will say, if it's really true that the columns, right, that the margins, I should say, have Kiddusha, the empty margins have Kiddusha, then you should be able to save the Sefer by dint of the margins. The fact that the Braisa doesn't say that, but the Braisa requires 85 letters, indicates to me what? That Halacha L'maisa, the margins themselves, don't have Kiddusha, to which the Gemara says, Bala Shani. No, it could very well be that a worn-out Sefer Torah is different. Right? They will say that a worn-out Sefer Torah, once it's worn out, perhaps everyone will agree that in those cases, the margins themselves lose their sanctity. So Tashma, Sefer Torah Shenimchak, if you have a Sefer Torah that was erased, Im Yesh Boket Lelakeit Shmonim Bechamish Osios Kigon Parashat Vayibin Sa'aron Matzilin Vim Lav Im Matzilin. Same idea, if you have a Sefer Torah that was erased, if it still has 85 letters, it has the status of a Sefer and can be saved. But if not, you can't save it on Shabbos Va'amai. But even if it doesn't have 85 letters, Sefer Klein Mishum Gilyon Didei, right? Ultimately, I'm going to both say, interestingly enough, why don't we treat the erased spaces like the margins, right? And therefore, you should be able to go ahead and save it based on the erased spaces, to which the Gemara says, Makom Aksav Lo Kami Bayle. No. When it comes to areas on which there was writing on the parchment, everyone agrees, Dichi Kadosh Agav Ksafu Kadosh. Azl Ksav, Azla Lo Kidushase. So let's say everyone agrees on an area where there was writing, that area of the parchment only has Kiddusha if the writing is still there. Once the writing is gone, the parchment has no more Kiddusha. Ki kami baile, where's the Shaila? Shalmaila v'shalmata, shebein parasha l'parasha, shebein dav l'dav, shebein tchilas sefer, shebein sofa sefer. But let's say our Shaila is the designated margins. Do the designated margins of a Sefer Torah, on the top of each column, bottom of each column, in between columns, beginning of the Sefer, end of a Sefer, do those margins, which are by design left blank, do they have Kiddusha? So we'll say, so just to illustrate to you where this case would come up, imagine for a moment, somebody detaches the margins. So we'll say, let's say, for, it doesn't matter why, somebody cut off the margins of a Sefer Torah, the blank margins. Now again, Sefer Torah is still kosher. Let's say somebody cut it off, and Reuven cut it off, and he has it resting in his house. A fire breaks out in Reuven's house. Is Reuven permitted to save the margins or not? That's the Shiloh we're dealing with. Do the margins have Kiddusha or not? To which, or for that matter, you have a Sefer Torah, that again, like we mentioned before, well, okay, let's see. So the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says,
So I don't understand, why not go ahead and say that we could save the Sefer because of the margins? The guy is vishadi. Then in that case, we're talking about a situation where the margins were removed and discarded. So we'll say we still don't know what to do with the margins. Tashma. Hagilyonin Shalmaila Vishalmata, Shibin Parsha La Parsha, Shibin Daf, Daf Shavitla Sefer Shavit Sofa Sefer. So what's this? So the Braisa says as follows. The margins on the top and on the bottom of the writing, in between columns, between one section of parchment and another section of parchment, at the beginning of the scroll, end of the scroll, Metamenes Hayadan. Now, both remember again, we've seen this before. There is a halacha that says as follows, a rabbinic enactment, that if you touch a scroll, your hands become tamei vis-a-vis truma. That if you were to go ahead and touch truma, you would convey tuma to the truma. Remember again, why did Chazal do that? Remember, we saw this, we said this is in Brachas. Because what did people used to do? People used to store their truma in the Aron Kodesh. Right? And they would say, they say for Torah is Kaddish, the truma is Kaddish, everything is Kaddish, and therefore we should just store them one next to the other. What was the problem? The problem is that rodents got into the Aron, started eating the truma, and as a result started nibbling on the parchment of the Sifrei Torah as well. So therefore, in order to go ahead and prevent this practice from occurring, so Chazal said that if you touch the parchment of a scroll, your hands become tamei, convey tuma to truma, and render the truma unfit for consumption. Thereby really, really, really dissuading people in a significant way from going ahead and placing their truma next to their Sefer Torah. So the Gemara said, yeah, we see that what? If you touch the margins, your hands become tamei. Your hands become tamei. So that would seem to indicate that what? That the margins themselves do have kedusha. Dilma agav Sefer Torah shiny. But it's very possible that ultimately, again, when the Sefer Torah, meaning, it could be that legabe tuma, since the margins obviously are part of the same Sefer, that ultimately, again, they'll convey tuma. But that doesn't necessarily tell us what we could do regarding the margins on Shabbos. To which the Gemara says, Tashma, ha-gilyonim v'sifrei minin, ein matzilin osam ibnei adalika. So we'll say gilyonim, margins, and sifrei minin. Now, interestingly enough, sifrei minin are svarim written by heretics. Now we'll say, we're gonna get into this a little bit in Meretz Hashem. That ultimately, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says sifrei minin are misharsim la'avodah zarah, v'kasvu lahen torah nevim uksuvim ksav ashuris v'lashna kodesh. So we'll say this is actually quite interesting. So we're talking about over here. This is where, let's say, we'll say somebody who is a heretic, wrote a sefer Torah. He wrote a sefer Torah, or for that matter, he wrote a scroll of nevim and ksuvim, and it's totally kosher, meaning he wrote a bona fide sefer Torah. On parchment, with dio, with ksav ashuris, the right script, the right ink, the right parchment, mamish perfect. Mamsha, everything is perfect except the person, right? Except the sofer. So the sofer wrote it as a heretic. So what's the halacha? So the Gemara says, margins, right? The margins, Gilyonin, v'sifrei minin, imatzilosom ne'adaleka, elin esarfim n'koman. You cannot save them from the fire, but rather you allow them to be burned in place. Hein va'azkaros sehen. Both the books, the svarim, even if they contain the name of Hashem. My love, Gilyonin, the Sefer Torah. Is this not referring to the margins of a Sefer Torah? You see from here that the margins themselves do not have kedusha. To which the Gemara says, no, lo, Gilyonin, the Sefer minin. Rather, it's referring to the margins of svarim written by mina apikarsin hashda sifrei minan gufayu in matzilin gilyonim. Why? That doesn't make any sense. If the Braisa tells you about that you have a sefer Torah that was written by a min, that was written by a heretic, that you're not allowed to save that sefer Torah on Shabbos, if I can't, because again, Rosai, this goes back to the basic idea that what endows a sefer Torah with kedusha is not the ink and not the parchment and not the script, but rather the sofer who writes it. So if the person who wrote the sefer is a heretic, the sefer has no kiddusha. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, if a fire breaks out, you are not permitted to save such a sefer. So the Gemara says, it can't be talking about the gilyon, the margins of a sefer Torah like that, because if that sefer you're allowed to burn, of course the margins have no kiddusha. Hachikam, that's what it means to say. V'sifrei minin, harei hein kigilyonin. What's what it means to say is like this: a Sefer Torah written by an Apikorisan heretic is just like the margins of a regular Sefer. And just like the margins of a regular Sefer Torah, even if written by a kosher Sofer,
ultimately, again, don't have Kiddusha. So too, the entire Sefer written by a heretic does not have Kiddusha as well. So the Gemara says, Gufa, so we'll say, so let's, before we get to this, so what's the halacha regarding the margins? So interestingly enough, the Shulchan Aruch writes, this is in Shin Lamed Dalet, Sif Chaf, sorry. So the Shulchan Aruch writes as follows, Hagilyonin Shalamalo Shalamata, V'shebein Parsha L'Parsha, V'shebein Daf L'Daf, Shebetchilas HaSefer, Shebesof HaSefer, Ein Matzilin Osan. So we'll say, so ultimately again, so halacha l'maisa, the Shulchan Aruch paskins, the margins themselves have no inherent Kiddusha Sefer Torah. So therefore the Mishnah Berurah explains whether you have a situation where the margins themselves were detached from the Sefer, or you have a scroll that doesn't have 85 letters in it. So again, the margins do not have Kiddusha, and therefore for Shabbos purposes, if Chas Hashem, a fire were to break out, ultimately, again, you would not be permitted to go ahead and save the margins on Shabbos. Good. That's that, Rabbi Osai. So now, once the Gemara brought up the Sefer Torah written by an Apikores, we're going to spend a little bit of time on that, because this is really quite fascinating. So Gufa. So Gemara raises the kasha. Gufa. Hagil yonav esifrei minin ein matzilin osom ne'adaleika. If you have margins of a Sefer, or for that matter, Rabbi Osai, remember again, when we say sifrei minin, we're talking about, let's say, an Apikores, someone who is a non-believer. This is now, Rabbi Osai, a min is a Jew, just to be clear. It's not a Jew, right? We're talking about over here, a Jew who is an apikores, a Jew who is a heretic. So such a person goes ahead and writes a Sefer Torah. That Sefer has no Kiddusha. That Sefer has no holiness. And therefore, should a fire break out on Shabbos, one would not be permitted to go ahead and save that Sefer on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi or Bechol Kodres Haskar Shaban V'Gonzon V'Ashar Sarfan. Rabbi Yossi says, during the week, if you come across such a Sefer, what you should do is cut out the names of God in the Sefer, put those in Shemus. So put the names of God in Shemus. The rest of the Sefer you could burn, right? The rest of the Sefer has no Kiddusha. I'm Rabbi Tarfon. Echbach es bonai. So Rabbi Tarfon says, literally, I will bury my sons. I will say that was like a lashon of shul. I swear, she'im yavou liyadi shani esrof os osam ve'esas kar shemer. I promise, I swear my son's life, that if I get a hold of such a Sefer Torah written by a heretic, I'll burn the whole thing. Even the names of God that are written in that Sefer have absolutely no holiness, and I would burn the whole thing. The Gemara says, Shafilu Adam Rodef, so listen to this, why? Rabbi says, this is incredible. Shafilu Adam Rodef Acharav Lahargo. Rabbi says, because Rabbi Tarfon says, even if someone is running after you to kill you, V'nachash Ratz La'akisho, or a snake is slithering after you to bite you, Nichnas L'Beis Avodah Zarah, you could run into a house of idolatry to save yourself, Ve'in nichnas lebatein shel elu, but never should you enter into a home of a heretic, right? Home of Jewish heretics. Why? Shehalalu makirin v'kofrin, because Rabbi Osai, because at the end of the day, v'halalu imakirin v'kofrin. Rabbi Osai, this is really incredible. So Rabbi Tarfon says like this: you know, Goyim, Gentiles who worship Avodah Zarah, this is what they know. This is what they know, right? So if that's what you know, that's what you know. If that's the theology you were brought up with, then that's the theology you have. There's nothing really more to talk about. So therefore, again, there's a certain lack of malice. A Jewish heretic, unfortunately, knows. He knows. And yet, even though he knows, he actively and willingly turns his back. Such an individual, Rabbi Tarfon says, you must stay away from in totality. Literally, even if someone is pursuing you to kill you, don't run into his house. Obviously, I will say it's a bit hyperbolic, right? It's a bit hyperbolic. But again, Rabbi Tarfon is trying to make a really fascinating distinction between Avodah Zarah and Minos. There's a distinction between idolatry and heresy. Idolatry, that's their theology. That's their religion. That's what they know. There's no malice. But heresy, where a Jew knows, and yet he actively chooses to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that Rabbi Tarfon says, you must stay away from at all costs. And as Rabbi Tarfon says, if I were to get a hold of a Sefer written by a heretic, I'd burn the whole thing. V'alein HaKasavaron, about them, about the heretics, it says, V'achar hadas al-mezuzah samta zichronech.
behind the door, behind the mezuzah, they have placed their remembrance. In other words, the reference, the metaphor being, they throw a Kaddish Baruch Hu behind the door. Amar Bishmal Kavachomer. Rabbi Shmuel says that Rabbi Tarfon is right, and the Keshe based on the Kavachomer. Uma laso shono ben ishla ishto amra Torah shimi shenichta b'kdusha imachal amayim. But says, Rabbi Shmuel says like this, you know, by sota, a man suspects his wife of committing adultery. And again, it's more than a suspicion. It's a suspicion that has at least some circumstantial evidence to it. So remember, again, the whole process of sota. You take the parchment, dissolve it in water, and she drinks it. And that drink, right, that concoction tests her purity or not. So ultimately, again, yet even though that allows for the dissolving of a parchment with God's name on it. With God's name on it. To which the Gemara says, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows his name to be erased in order to make shalom between a husband and wife, halalu shematilin kina ve'eva v'tachros bein Yisrael avin shal shamayim, alachas kama v'kama. These heretics, which cause so much animosity, so much dissent, and so much discord between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, certainly their writings could be erased. Now, as we'll say, it's interesting, Kal v'chomer. If you can erase the name of Hashem to go ahead and make shalom between a husband and a wife, certainly you could go ahead and erase an entire scroll, destroy an entire scroll in order to make shalom between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his children. Pretty incredible. To which the Gemara says, Va'aleim Amar David, and about these heretics, David HaMelech says, Halo misanecha Hashem esna, ubiskomemecha eskotat. Tachlis, sina sinisim, la'ayvim hayuli. So again, David HaMelech says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, those who hate you, I will hate. And ultimately, again, the tachlis is in the essence of hatred. I will hate them, for they have become my enemies. I will say this, you know, highlights. It's painful. It's actually, it's really very painful to speak about this, because it highlights the notion that sometimes the greatest pain that is caused to Klal Yisrael does not come from inside our nation, but comes from inside our people. It hurts to say the words. It's not new. This has been an age-old issue for Klal Yisrael, but it's a painful idea. And this is why you see that Chazal, and this is really what's incredible. You know, generally we assume like the Oved Avod Zara is like the Avi Avos Atoma, like the paradigmatic example of someone who is impure and unholy. And yet, you see, Rabbi Tarfon says, no, the Oved Avod Zara, I don't agree with what he's doing. I don't agree with his theology. But at the end of the day, that's his theology. It's not motivated out of malice. That's just what he knows. But the apikores, the min, the meshumad, the Jew who knows and actively turns his back. And again, we'll see, you have to understand something also. The context in which they're speaking is very often these heretics. It's not the pshat that like someone decided, you know, I don't want a Kaddish Baruch Hu anymore, and they decide to move to Oklahoma, you know, and mind their own business. They're not involved in Judaism anymore. That's between a person and God. The heretics they speak about over here are individuals who actively tried to undermine Jewish interests. And unfortunately, again, throughout our history, it's been Jews who tried to harm other Jews and undermine Jewish interests who, Rachmana Litzlan, have caused the greatest amount of pain. Ultimately, again, from Kamsa Bar Kamsa, and we see it happen, unfortunately, it happens presently in our world as well. So that's why Chazal really has such an intense reaction towards them. Ukashem, Shin Matsilosom Nyadleika, Kach Imatsilosom Lominam Apolas, Vilominamayim, Vilomi Davrama Abdin. Abos, in the same way that if you have a sefer written by an apikores, you can't save it from a fire. It's not just a fire, but any time that this scroll written by an apikores is going to be destroyed, you leave it alone, right? Whether it's buried under rubble or falls into water or anything else that would destroy the scroll, there is no need for you to try to save it. Boimini Yosef Bar Chanin, Rabbi Avo, Hani Sifrei Debe Avidan, Matzilin Osame Me'adaleka O'in Matzilin. Suppose this is very interesting. What about the Svarim of Be Avidan? Now, what's Be Avidan? Look at Rashi. This is incredible. The Be Avidan, Svarim, Shekasvu Lahem Haminim, Lehisvakeach Im Yisrael. These are Svarim written by Minim, right? We'll say now, Minim Bepashtos means heretics, in order to philosophically debate. Lehisvakeach Im Yisrael, Obemakom Shemisvakeachim Sham Karile Be Avidan. So we'll say, see, here what the Gemara is referring to is as follows. These scrolls were written by Minim, and I want to show you something absolutely amazing. Depending on the version of the Gemara you will have something called Hagos Vitziyunim. If you do, then you have a little chaf in your Rashi.
right by there. And you'll notice that I'll take it to Gosinai. What does it say? Hagalochim. It will say, we know that throughout the ages, the Gemara had many, many changes, right? It was censored many times. The original version of Rashi reads, not meaning, but rather galochim, priests. Priests. There were priests who used to write Sifrei Torah. Why would, and they were both say, beautiful, perfect Sifrei Torah, right? Perfect Sifrei Torah. Why would they write Sifrei Torah? This was done in order to engage in philosophical or theological debates with Jews. So Beit Avidan was an example of a place where they used to gather for philosophical debates. So now the Gemara says, so what's the status of Sfarim written for Beit Avidan? So this is a place where, again, Jews and Gentiles, right, or Jews and idolaters, or Jews and priests, or Jews and other religions would gather to debate philosophy or religion. So they had Sfarim there. So what is the status of those Sfarim? So the Gemara says, in v'liv v'lav v'raf yabiyadeh. So both say, Rabbi Avo wasn't sure. Sometimes he said, yes, you can save them. Sometimes he said, no, you can't save them. He wasn't sure what the halacha, what the status of these Sfarim was. So the Gemara says the following, Rav lo azul be'avidon, Rav in general would never go to be'avidon. We'll say this is really quite incredible. Rav would not go to debate in be'avidon. The kol shekin lebein nitzrafi. And all the more so, he wouldn't go to Bein Nitzrafi. And I will say, Rashi says, Nitzrafi was Avodah Zarah. That was the house of idolatry. So Be'avidon wasn't the house of idolatry. It really was designated as a place of philosophical debate. But Rav would not engage in these philosophical debates. So I will say, so Rav wouldn't engage in the philosophical debates for really a couple of reasons. Number one, because nothing good really ever came from it. And I will say, Klal Gadol in life is, it's really only kedai to enter into a conversation with someone if they actually want to hear what you have to say, or you want to hear what they have to say. If either of the parties enters into a discussion with an absolutely unequivocally closed mind, then at the end of the day, the conversation is usually futile, right? There's usually not much to a conversation. So Rav in general stayed away from these philosophical debates, as he felt that they did not yield anything positive. So we'll say, so he wouldn't go to Beit Avidon. Certainly, they also had these philosophical debates, apparently like in like some type of idolatrous temple. He certainly didn't go there. So Shmuel, lebei nitzofei lo azel, lebei Avidon azel. So Shmuel would not go to Beit Nitzofei, because that was a place of Avodah Zarah. But Shmuel would go to the philosophical debates in Beit Avidon. Amulei l'Rava, so they said to Rava, my time alo asis le be'avidon. So I said to Rava, why don't you come with us to be'avidon? So Rava said, Amr lehu dikla planya ika ba'archa v'kashili. So Rava didn't want to say, because it's a waste of time. So we'll say, so remember again, this goes to, you're going to see, this highlights a deeper motif, which you're going to see in just a moment, which is as follows. So Rava didn't want to say, I don't want to go because it's a waste of time. So instead of Rava saying, you know, I would go, but there's this big palm tree that makes it difficult for me to walk, so therefore I just choose not to go. They said, oh, the palm tree? Ni akre. No problem. We'll uproot that guy, right? Well, we'll just take that out, right? Well, I know a guy. I mean, I'm Jewish. I'm not going to uproot it myself. But I have a guy who I could call to go ahead and do that, right? So my guy will come, he'll uproot it, and that way you can come to Beit Avidon. So the Gemara says, Duchte Kashle, to which Rava said, you know, but still, the pathway, right? The pathway is uneven. It's not going to be good. So let's say, so Rava kept deflecting. He did not want to be in a position to have to go to Beit Avidon. Mar bar Yosef Amar Ana Minayhu Ana V'lo Mistafina Minayhu. So let's listen to this. Mar bar Yosef says, you know what? I go to debate the priests and everyone else and the Minim, because the truth is I'm close with them. So because I'm close with them, again, I can have open and honest dialogue. To which the Gemara says, Zimna chada azul boi l'sakune. So he was close with them until he wasn't. Right? When Mar Bar Yosef one time was debating with them, and he felt himself in danger. In other words, I guess there was one time where the Maase's arguments were very persuasive and overwhelming, and suddenly, again, the people who he thought he was close with, he realized he was not so close with. So we'll say, Se'ima shalom devisud Rabbi Eliezer. So we'll say, there's another piece to this, which is something quite fascinating in general, which is, this is just a separate idea. We've spoken about this before. You know, Judaism in general does not,
if you notice, there's not really a, or at least there wasn't originally a body of Jewish philosophy. Right? Jewish philosophy really became codified with the Rambam and others in his time as a reactive approach, because other religions were codifying philosophical ideas and tenets. In general, Judaism doesn't see all that much benefit in debating philosophical tenets, because it doesn't really lead to anything all that concrete. So that's why you also see Rava and others really avoiding these type of interactions out of a concern that nothing really positive could come from it. That's what's underlying. So in other words, there's a value to philosophy, right? There's a value to understanding things. There's a value to deep thought. But there's not, at least the Gemara felt, there's not really all that much value to debating it with others who don't necessarily share your beliefs. That really, again, the Gemara felt really only leads, potentially leads to negative fallout for Jews. The Gemara goes weiter. The Gemara says an incredible story. Ema Shalom, Divisid Rabbi Eliezer, Achsid Rabbi Gamliel Havai. So it's Ema Shalom, that was her name. Ema Shalom was the wife of Rabbi Eliezer and the sister of Rabbi Gamliel. So the Gemara says, Hava Ahu Philosopha Bishvevuse. There was a certain philosopher. Now it's interesting. Rashi defines philosopher as a min, as a heretic. As a heretic. Now, Rashi doesn't mean to say that every philosopher is a heretic. Rashi just happened to point out, you'll see why that's important to the story. In this particular context, this individual was a Jew. He was a quote-unquote, well-established philosopher, but he was a min. He was an apikores. So watch this. And he had a reputation that he never accepted bribes. So he was a philosopher, he was a judge, and he enjoyed a reputation of being incredibly honest, never accepting bribes. There was only one problem, which was what? He accepted bribes. He accepted bribes. And Ema Shalom knew that he accepted bribes. The Rabbi Gamliel knew that he accepted bribes. But yet this guy held himself out to be so pious, so worldly, so knowledgeable, that he was profoundly dishonest. See, Ema Shalom and her brother Rabbi Gamliel set out to go ahead and show the world what this guy is. So they wanted to prove to the world that he was a fraud. So they had a court date, and before the court date, Ema Shalom brought this guy a golden candelabra. Beautiful golden candelabra. So what happened? So what happens? The next day they come to court, says Rabbi Gamliel and his sister. And they say, the sister, Ema Shalom, says, our father died. And as a daughter, I think that I'm entitled to half of the estate. Amr lehu, plugo, to which the philosopher said, you're right, divide the estate. Ema Shalom, you get 50%. Rabbi Gamliel, you get 50%, split the estate evenly. Amar lei, so Rabbi Gamliel says, what are you talking about? Ksiv lan b'makom bra bartolosirus. So Rabbi Gamliel says, our Torah says that where there is a son, a daughter doesn't inherit. In other words, the only time a daughter inherits is when there's no son. I will say now, again, there are exceptions to that rule as well. But again, in a vacuum, right? Where there's a son, the son inherits the estate. So Rabbi Gamliel says to the philosopher, he says to the judge, what are you doing? Right? That's not our halacha. Amar lei, to which the philosopher responds, min yoma de gal yosan me'arachon, it is natlis oraisa de Moshe, v'isya v'sifach risi, from the day that you were exiled from your land, the book of Moshe, the Torah, was replaced with another book of law. And in this new book of law, what does it say? Uksiv bei bro ubarta kichada yarson. And in this new book of law, it says that a son and daughter inherit equally. Okay, that was the ruling. L'machar hadir ayale iu chamra luva. So the next day, I said, okay, so court went into break, and then we're going to continue the next day to work out the rest of the details. That the next day, before they went back to court, Rabbi Gamliel goes over to the judge, and what does he give him? A chamra luva, alluvian donkey. They both say best species of donkeys out there. It's mamish, it's like the Tesla of donkeys. Right? So mamish, he gives him, right? Gives him an alluvian donkey. So what happens? So we'll say, now they come back to court. Amar lehu, shfilas l'sefer de sifra. So this philosopher saying, I've been thinking a little bit about the ruling I gave yesterday. You know, maybe it was a little bit hasty. I said that a son and daughter should go ahead and split the estate equally. But the truth is, if you go to the end of our book of law, right, section 3.2, article 5, you know, says, the kasav bay, ana lo lemifchas min oraisa de Moshe Asisi, v'lo le'asufe al oraisa de Moshe Asisi. The truth is, I realized that the truth is, it's not my place to add or to diminish from the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. And it says in the book of Moshe, it says in the Torah, that wherever there is a son, ultimately the daughter doesn't inherit. So we'll say, see this guy, mamish a fraud. Right? So yesterday he paskined in accordance with the daughter. Right? That ultimately, again, wherever there is a son, son and daughter, you know, split equally. Now he's saying again, no, the halacha is like what the Torah says. That wherever there's a son, the daughter doesn't inherit. So listen to this. So Amrlei, Nahar Naharech Kishraga. So Ima Shalom says to the judge, says to the philosopher, you know, your rulings should illuminate the world just like a golden candelabra, right? A reference ultimately again to the bride she gave him. Amrlei Rabbi Gamliel said, Atza Chamra Ubata Shlashraga. My donkey came and kicked over your candelabra. So they exposed, obviously they didn't have a real debate about inheritance. There was no real legal matter over here. All of this was done ultimately to go ahead and, all of this was done in order to go ahead and expose the fraudulent nature of this individual. But say, what's the point of the Gemara? So the point the Gemara is pointing out over here is that unfortunately many times people hid behind philosophy to go ahead and mask truly disingenuous identities. That a lot of times the espousing of philosophical tenets, unfortunately, again, did not go ahead and come from a deep-rooted sense of holiness or idealism, but often masked a lot of inherent personalistic fraud. Right? That's now again, obviously not everyone will say just like that people will hide behind religion and espouse religious ideals, but are not really genuine people. So again, this goes back to this is why Rava never really wanted to engage with these individuals. Again, fine. So the Gemara goes weiter. Remember again, let's go back for just a moment. So the Mishnah said that halacha lemaaseh, you could save a sefer Torah on Shabbos, and you could save even a book of Tanakh on Shabbos, of Nevi'im on Shabbos. What can't you save? You can't save a book of, you are not allowed to read from a book of Ksuvim. Of Ksuvim, right? Why can't you read from Ksuvim on Shabbos? Mipnei Bittul Beis HaMedrash. So remember again, Rashi explains Mipnei Bittul Beis HaMedrash. What used to happen on Shabbos? The Rav of the city would give a shir. And what was the shir? The shir was on halacha. What to do, what not to do. So what were they concerned about? That if a person starts reading Ksuvim, we'll say in general, Ksuvim is always much more interesting than halacha. So if a person starts reading Ksuvim, what's going to happen? They're going to get caught up in their reading of Ksuvim, and they're not going to go to shir. And if they don't go to shir, they're not going to learn halacha. And if they don't learn halacha, then they're going to be spiritually and Judaically deficient. Therefore, Chazal said, no reading of Ksuvim on Shabbos. To which the Gemara says, Amar Rav lo shor ela bizman beis hamedrash. Ava shelo bizman beis hamedrash korin. So Rav said, that's only true. You can't read it, can't read Ksuvim, at the time that the Rav was giving a shir in the beis hamedrash. But during the rest of Shabbos, you can. Ushmul amar afilu shelo bizman beis hamedrash in korin. Shmuel says, no, even at a time when the Rav wasn't giving the shir, you can't read Ksuvim all of Shabbos. Ini, is that so? Vaha Narda Asre de Shmuel. Yet Narda was the city of Shmuel, but Narda va Paski Sidra b'Ksuvim b'Minchasa de Shabbos. Yet in Narda, they used to go ahead and read a section of Ksuvim by Shabbos Mincha. So that apparently Shmuel did allow for the reading of Ksuvim. Ella Itmar Hachi Itmar. Here's how you have to read the Machlokes. Amarav Lo Shanu Ella b'Makom Beis HaMedrash. Ava Shelo b'Makom Beis HaMedrash Koren. Rav says, the only prohibition to read Ksuvim is in the place of the Beis HaMedrash, in the place where the Rav was giving Shir. Because then there was a concern that what's going to happen? The Rav is going to be giving Shir, and you're going to be reading something else, right? This is like the equivalent of like the Israel newsletter, right? The Rav is going to be giving the Drasha, right? And you're going to be reading something else. You're going to be reading something else. So therefore, again, you're not allowed to read Ksuvim in the place where the Rav is giving the Drasha. Ushmul Amr Shmuel says, Bein B'Makom Beis HaMedrash, Bein Shelo B'Makom Beis HaMedrash,
Bizman Beis HaMedrash in Korin, Shelo Bizman Beis HaMedrash Korin. So Shmuel says, no. Geography is not really an issue over here. Right? It does mean at the time that the Rav is giving the shir, you can't read Ksuvim. It doesn't matter if you're in the Beis HaMedrash or if you're at home. We don't want anything distracting you from going to shir. But when it's not the time of the Rav's shir, then you are permitted to read Ksuvim. Va'az de Shmuel Atameh, Shmuel goes according to his reasoning, de Ben Arda, Paski Sirja de Ksuvim, Be Minchasa de Shabsa. Because we'll say, Narda, they used to go ahead and read a section of Ksuvim by Shabbos Mincha. So that's the position of Shmuel. Halacha lemaisa, you could go, it's only at the time of the shir, you can't read Ksuvim whether you're in the Beis HaMedrash or whether you're at home. But when it's not the time of the shir, you can read Ksuvim. Rav Ashi Amar the Olam Kidamra Meikara. So Rav Ashi says, in reality, it's as we said before, Ushmo Rabbi Nechemya. And I will say, Shmo holds like Rabbi Nechemya, who says that the reading of Ksuvim on Shabbos is probably for a totally different reason. The Sanya, here we go. Even though we said that you can't read Ksuvim on Shabbos, however, Aval Shonin Bahen, they both say you could learn the Midrashim associated with Ksuvim. You could learn the Midrashim associated with Ksuvim, the Darshin Bahen, and again, you could learn in depth Ksuvim, Nitzrach LePasek, maybe V'Roebo. If ultimately, again, you need a Pasek from Ksuvim, you're looking something up, you could look up a Pasek in a scroll of Ksuvim. Arev Nechemya, Mipnei Ma Amru Kisei Kodesh Ein Korin Bahen. So Nechemya says, why is it that Chazal said you can't read Ksuvim? Listen to this. In order that a person should say, if there was, listen to this, if there's a limitation on my ability to read Ksuvim, then certainly I can't read mundane business matters as well. So Nechemya says something amazing. Because right? Think about this. There is some level of legislation regarding learning Torah on Shabbos. So Chazal says, okay, so there might be a machlokes as to, you know, when you're not allowed to read Ksuvim, how you're not allowed to read Ksuvim, what part of Ksuvim, Medrash Ksuvim. The point is there's a discussion, right? There's a discussion about not learning some type of Torah on Shabbos. So Nechemiah says, the whole reason why Chazal instituted some limitation on Ksuvim, although that limitation is subject to dispute, right? The reason Chazal instituted it was why? In order to teach you, if there's a limitation on Ksuvim, Alachas kama v'kama, there's a limitation on the other mundane matters that we read on Shabbos. And I will say, so halacha l'maisa, halacha l'maisa. So contemporarily, we don't have this limitation on Ksuvim, right? You can learn any Ksuvim you want on Shabbos, but we do have a limitation, ultimately, again, on reading mundane matters on Shabbos. So whether it's business items, work-related items, or for that matter, things not really related to Shabbos, related to Kedusha, again, there's obviously, you don't have to necessarily learn Torah the entire Shabbos, a person reads a book, but the idea is that a person should be conscious and cognizant of what it is that they are spending their time reading and learning on Shabbos. All right, there was, we'll stop over here. Meretz Hashem will pick up at the Mishnah. Meretz Hashem tomorrow. Shkach, we'll say beautiful daf together. We'll begin the minyan from the Shul parking lot, the Meretz Hashem, at 7 a.m. with Mizmor Shir. Yashikach, everyone.